Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 200. Our guest this week is a freelance composer and sound designer and a classically trained pianist, which we will get into. We have Neha Patel. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I have to come clean. This whole thing has been a ruse to talk about your cat.
Oh my God, yes. I'm so happy she's here right now. I'm so happy. Her name is Nala. She's a year and a half old. She's a calico. We got her from a shelter. She's going through some health issues right now, so fingers crossed. But yeah, she's basically a dog in the body of a cat.
Okay. One and a half, so young. Mine's six, I think.
Oh.
I'm sorry to hear about the health issues.
Yeah, she has Crohn's disease.
Oh.
Which we just found out right now. So we're having some trouble with food. And there's some other health things that we're still looking into.
Yeah.
But she seems great. I mean, she's playing as usual. Her favorite toys are a plastic fork and green ball.
Have you had a cat before?
No, it's my first time ever. I've never had a pet. I told myself when I got like a cat that, oh, I just want to be like a normal person that, you know, gives a home and food and shelter to like a little animal that's in need. And I would not become a full-on cat mom. That lasted like less than a minute. The moment I had her, I just changed. And my whole life revolves around her.
Exactly the same. Yeah, I've had my cat now 4 years, and yeah, first pet ever, and I'm just, like, I see the way, I've always kind of like, ugh, when people like treat cats like a child, and I am now totally that.
Right, I'm exactly there. I've been called a helicopter cat mom, and I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, my girlfriend makes fun of me because, I flip-flop. I'm like, he's too skinny. He's got to eat more. And then like, oh, I think we're feeding him too much. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. onto the real stuff. Yes. So as I said in the beginning there, you are a classically trained pianist. And you say that you secretly spent time playing video game music like the Final Fantasy piano collections. Can you tell us, you know, right in the beginning, were you like thinking when you got into piano, were you like, okay, I'm actually doing this for video game stuff, or did that kind of come naturally after?
Oh, that's so true. The first part, I started piano lessons because I wanted to play One Winged Angel, like the piano collection version. I was like, oh my God, I heard this, I need to play this. I was 8 years old, so I told my parents that I wanted piano lessons. My mother understand the context that, you know, they were immigrants from India, from a village. They didn't know that music was good for a child. It wasn't something that they had ever heard about. So, and we were really poor too. So they were like, no, you're not getting lessons. Like, this is like, no, like, who cares about piano? Like, piano is not good. Like, what does that do in your life? You know, like, go for math lessons. But then I nagged him for a year, almost 2 years, and then I got hit by a car. And that was awesome because, like, I broke my hand and whatever. But the day they removed my cast, the doctor said that, huh, you have such long fingers. Do you play piano? And my parents just had this stare of like, oh my God, this is a sign. And that's how I got my piano lessons. So it all started from wanting to play One Winged Angel. And then I fell in love with classical music. I was like, wow, this is great. I love Beethoven. I love Shostakovich. I love all this stuff. So I really practiced that a lot, thinking that if I get my classical chops to a certain level, I will be able to play video game music. And that's kind of how it worked out.
I like that. I think I know what you mean there, but it kind of sounds like you're saying, like, once I learn all those classics, then I'll be good enough to play video game music.
Oh, absolutely. Well, turns out I learned it at the same time, like simultaneously-ish. But I owe so much to my classical music training. Like, I don't think I'd be here if it wasn't for classical piano.
So with long fingers, can you play Rachmaninoff?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So I don't even have that much of like, they're average fingers actually. But I was a tall child, so I think I'm really skinny, so it just looked really long. I'm pretty sure I have average hands. Rachmaninoff is a must. I love my Russian composers. I love Shostakovich, Rachmaninoff, Prokofiev. If I could play just that, I am good to go.
How good are you? Just how good are you at Slay the
Spire? Oh, not that good. Oh my god,
sorry. How good are you at Slay the Spire?
Oh shit, you're there. You're going there.
Sorry, okay, I went way cool. off, yeah.
Okay, great. Slay the Spire. I am really good. Like, I hate... You see, when it comes to, like, my work or whatever, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can write a little bit. Like, I don't feel good just because there's so many people, like, that I know that are so freaking good. Same thing goes for piano or, like, basically any tasks in life. But when it comes to Slay the Spire... the PS5, you know, version is what I play. I think I'm pretty damn good. Like, I do my daily challenges on a religious level. I usually rank in the top 10. And I've also ranked number one. It's happened. But yeah, I don't know how it happened, but I am definitely very addicted to Slay the Spire.
Exciting.
I don't know any of the cards' names, though. Like, I just go by memory. Like, I can't name you a card.
Okay, so then you may
be... Or a character.
Maybe you can't tell me... I was going to ask, like, what's the secret? How do I get better at Slay the Spire?
Oh, but there's these combos, right, per character. But I can't, like, actually name them.
What about Slay the Spire 2? Are you excited?
Oh my god, so excited. I'm really curious to see where they're going to go with that, because it's already such a perfect game. How can you make it better? How can you build upon it? No. But no, I'm super, super stoked for it.
All right. Sorry, I went way off there. We'll go back to piano. You taught? Maybe you still teach. You taught piano. It was a way to supplement your income when you were early days doing sound design and composing in games. Did you ever teach? Like, did you use video game music to teach to your students?
Yeah, actually. So I used to teach. Well, I stopped during when the pandemic started. But prior to that, I had students from various ages, right? Some were 5, some were like 70 something. But the majority was like teen, early adult. And a lot of them actually did reach out to me because I had written in my, you know, the ad that I posted that, you know, I like video game music, I play it a lot, and I guess that was something that people were like, whoa, like, this is cool, right? So I did integrate that a lot in my teaching, for sure. I mean, I'm a pretty strict teacher, so, like, you know, you're practicing your skills, you're doing this, you're doing that, we're doing the technical chops first, but assuming you have a certain basis, right, and you want to just learn more video game music just for the fun of it, right? Then please, let's go ahead. But I won't be teaching, like, you know, by playing just by ear or those terrible YouTube videos where they, you know, those piano synthesia. Well, I forgot what it's called, but it just shows you where to press the button. All of that, I'm morally against it because, like, I know the long-term effects of that on your technique. So I can't, you know, I can't be teaching that way. But I do integrate video game music if the student wants to.
Is there a specific song? Like, I would love to learn piano, and I have a piano here because my girlfriend plays. Is there a specific video game song you would say, that this is a good beginner song, this is something you could really learn on?
Oh, so for that, I would say that there's so many fan-made arrangements out there of, like, a beginner's version of, let's say, Tifa's team or this or that, that I would actually research a lot and find something for them, depending on their level. At some point, if you don't have the basics at all, we do have to work on that. Like, you have to learn how to read notes, right? But there are, I wouldn't say there's like a certain piece that's like, hey, play this, and that's your beginner level, because it's not like, you know, your classical music where there's like levels and there's only one version of it and that's it, right? With video game music, there's so many arrangements out there. Hell, I could write one for you for them too, right? That it really depends on what you want to play.
Okay. So not only are you're a composer, but you're also a sound designer, and I find this very interesting. You are a sound designer who hates recording sounds.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Why?
I really don't like it. It's such a hassle. Oh, so okay. For Venba, I did record a lot of sounds from scratch, and I would do it again, right? Because it was a game where we were doing, you know, in like Indian cooking sounds, and this is something I was very familiar with, right? So of course I wanted to cook certain dishes because it felt like they sound a certain way to me. But in general, but did I enjoy? Was I like, oh yeah, this is so much fun? No, I feel like it's a big hassle, and this is perhaps due to my work situation, in the sense that I work from home in a small room, but I don't actually have like a recording studio or proper mic setup or anything. But I just find it a hassle to always take my microphone out, get the chip out, put it back in my computer, edit everything. It's just such a long process just to get to the sound, right? And sometimes it won't even work. So for me, all of that is just, it's a hassle. And I don't like that hassle.
I've always thought I'm certainly not professional at doing it, but for my day job, I've had to record the odd sound, and there's a fun discovery sometimes, you know, like, okay, well, how am I going to do this? Do you have anything like that? Yeah. Where did you have a favorite, you know, oh, I don't know how to make this sound, and you play around and then, oh, I found it.
Yeah, mainly through sound libraries, but not so much just recording, right? It's really just the physical aspect of I'm away from my computer, I have to do all of this and then come back. But I do think it's really fun browsing libraries and trying to think in layers, trying to think in colors, trying to think in frequencies. All of that like turns my brain in a way that I have a lot of fun. I just don't like the physical aspect of recording a source material.
Okay, so I think you just answered my next question, which is, what if you don't like recording sounds, what do you like about sound design? Why are you a sound designer?
I'm a sound designer. Well, it started off as a need, actually. So I was doing a lot of game jams in my last year of studies in school. And, you know, you're like usually the only person doing audio on that team, right? So that's kind of how I learned sound design. It was really very much on the fly. And I realized that, hey, this is actually fun. Like, I really, really did enjoy, like, creating these sound effects. But I was creating these sound effects by layering sounds, by using existing sounds already. And they weren't exact, right? If I wanted, a magic attack, I wasn't just pulling up magic attack. I was still building it. But that building with sounds that already exist, that was really, really fun.
How did your, you mentioned, you know, you got into game jams early on. How did your entry into the industry, and I'm definitely specifically thinking about the internship you did, how did that shape who you are professionally?
Ooh, so that internship completely changed my life. So we're talking about, I think we're in 2019 right now, last year of studies. To be clear, it was my first year of a master's, so a two-year program. I had finished my undergraduate in 2018, and then I started a master's, and we are now in 2019, month of February, and the school required a unpaid internship. It was actually in words, like it was written that it had to be unpaid, right? An audio friend of mine, he was already in the industry, well established, working at a company. He knew about me, and he had some friends that were starting out the little, you know, indie company on a little game, and he was a sound designer on it back then, and they needed a composer, so he just out of the blue recommended me. And those two fellows, so the studio is Pomplemousse. It means grapefruit in French, in English. So Pomplemousse Games, they were making a game about childhood nostalgia called Spleen. And they needed a composer. And so they reached out to me through like my friend who recommended me, right? But one of their like founding ethos, like in their company, is that they don't believe in crunch. They don't believe in unpaid internships. These were things that they themselves, you know, suffered through the industry in various other companies. So in building their own thing, they didn't want that kind of unhealthy environment. So when they reached out to me, they were like, hey, we're going to pay you. I was like, cool, this is crazy. And to be clear, it's not like they just hired me right off the bat to work on the entire game. Back then, the internship was only for their Kickstarter page. So I was going to write music for the trailer and one piece of music just as a main theme of the game. And so they came to my school and they had a meeting with my master's like supervisor person, I guess. And they were like, yeah, I know it says unpaid internship, but we don't believe in that, so we're going to pay her. And he was like, okay. And that's how I got that internship, and that's how I was paid in that internship. And that's kind of how it changed my perception, my view of like, whoa, like you can actually be different. And like during that master's, I was pulling off all-nighters. I was crunching. I was not being healthy at all. It was a master's in composition for screen. So that means mostly film, but also video games and this and that, like various media. So it was very eye-opening to see that, huh, these are professionals and they have decided to do something different.
And now you've really taken that to heart. You do a lot of talking about, you know what you're worth and how to maximize your funds, you know, that kind of thing.
And I think before that, so that was 2019, but in 2018, I was finishing up my undergrad at McGill, and I got a scholarship to go to GDC. And that trip, I think, is what started the big thing of like, whoa, this is the game world. This is like, there's people that like video games that make them that are accessible to me, that, you know, they're real human beings, not just behind a big company. I was, I think, 23 or 22 at that point, and I was at a conservatory, like, you know, studying classical piano, and it's not somewhere where I could talk about video games, right? It was very, like, hush-hush. So getting that scholarship and being in an environment where people were just so open-hearted, meeting, like, an international community of game audio people also completely changed my life. Because even though I was from Montreal, I did not know a single game dev in the city. I didn't know anything at all because I was so, like, holed up in my little hole of classical music, which had its benefits, but also, as you see, its downsides, right? So that GDC trip kind of, like, opened up my horizons. I went to a bunch of really cool talks that actually talked about crunch, that talked about how you don't need fancy equipment to start into the industry, that your teachers might tell you that, hey, buy this expensive microphone, hey, buy this expensive tool, which actually they did, but you don't actually need it, especially as a freelancer who's starting out. So that trip, that experience, plus the internship that I got right after, I think changed who I was as a person.
I actually do have a question here. Did you ever upgrade your equipment? Because I know you were using, not the fancy stuff for a while.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I could tell you what I have. And, like, it's very similar to my old setup. So I used to work on a laptop. I think it had 16 gigs of RAM. And then I added in another extra 16 gigs of RAM, so 32. But it was really old. And it could not do more than like 8-inch, like it could do like 8-ish orchestral instruments, and then it would slow down as hell. One screen, just one, used audio interface, MIDI keyboard, and Zoom H4n. So that was my old setup. Nowadays, the Pamplemousse games, I've started back with them, and I actually got a new computer through them because I'm now an employee. Yay! So I have a really cool, like, tower that works incredibly well, a beautiful screen. So I have dual monitor now, but the same interface, the same MIDI keyboard, a better chair, and a standing desk, which is cool. But that's basically it. I mean, I haven't really, really changed. I haven't bought a new microphone. I haven't really, you know, change that much.
Is there anything you miss about the old stuff? You know, there's sometimes that, I don't know if it's a cliche, but the idea that having less kind of makes you experiment or use your imagination more.
No. I mean, I think the newest thing that I had is the computer here, right?
Right.
So I do not miss my old laptop. I had this song in when I would open up Reaper and it would freeze called 1-2-3 Click. Because it would freeze, like, I would click, it would freeze, I would click, it would freeze. I would just say, like, 1-2-3 click, 1-2-3 click. So I don't miss that at all. It's nice to have tools that enable to your work, for you to work. I understand that sometimes there's compromises and that, you know, gives birth to new ideas. But in my case, I think the freezing of my computer was not cool at all.
going back to Venba, which you did sound design for, one of the cool things, I think, and it's been talked about a lot. So obviously, Venba, you know, super critically acclaimed. People love it. And one of the things that gets talked about a lot is the sound in it. And in, like, several different articles I saw, one for Eurogamer by Liv Ngan, I'm probably mispronouncing that, I'm sorry. Karen Pradden for Slurp, again, I'm sorry about pronunciation. And Nicole Carpenter for Polygon. All of them talk about how you actually specifically used, like, different spices for each sound. And, like, did that really, like, does garam masala not sound like ginger? Like, do they have different sounds?
That's a really good question. Yeah, for the spices, especially for the whole spices mainly. So powders, it's like garam masala in powder form is going to sound, you know, the same as freaking turmeric in powder form, okay? But mustard seeds and jiru seeds, they don't sound the same. At least to me, they, when you fry them up, I know when it's mustard seeds and I know when it's rye. Like, I know the difference. And if I can tell the difference, I feel like a lot of people from an Indian household can probably tell you if it's mustard seeds or rye or jiru. So, like, depending on the ingredient, it was different to me. So, and I had, you know, it was something where the folks at Venba, like, especially at B, was like, hey, go for it. Like, have fun. Do it. They supported me. They gave me the time to do it. So why not?
Cool. And then when you listen back, were you able to be like, oh, yeah, that's the mustard seeds? Like,
ish, yeah. I mean, I cheated here and there, but more or less, I think so, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Did you, and then I guess presumably you would, like, were you making each meal? And
then cooked a lot.
Yeah, then you got to eat them, right?
Yeah, it was great leftovers. I didn't, like, make all of the recipes, but I did, I think my favorite one was probably making the biryani because there's so many steps that that one dish gave me a lot of material to work with.
How does it feel to have been a part of such an important game for people and you know, such a beloved game?
Honored, happy, surreal. it's yeah, like, the team was great. Our composer, Alpha Something, I mean, the soundtrack was just out of this world. It just brought out the different eras of the game, the different, you know, stages of life that the character was in. The writing was just incredible. Yeah, I don't know. It was a special game. I don't know if I'll ever be lucky enough to be on something that special, especially to me on a personal level. But I think I'm very honored.
Anything unique or different about you did sound design for Lost Your Marbles on the Playdate, and the Playdate is such a unique console, you know. Was there something different about how you do sound design on that?
Oh, so for Lost Your Marbles, that was really cool. So I did I wrote the soundtrack for that one too, and I was initially worried that, oh no, it looks like, this was back in 2020, right? And I was like, ooh, it looks like this weird device. Maybe, like, I won't be able to write that much because of, like, memory issues or storage or this or that. It was actually really, really simple. We had our awesome programmer, Ayla, and basically I just had to export it in a specific format, and that's it. It's very, it's a boring story. You'd think that I did something crazy, or there was, like, storage limitations and I had to, you know, work around that, but no, I just exported it in a different setting, and that was it.
Nothing with the crank?
Nothing with the crank.
You are a self-described, I believe you said this on the Work with Indies Devs Journey podcast, you are a self-described introvert. But how important, you also talk a lot about networking. So how important is it in this field to get out of that comfort zone, to get talking to people?
So I can only say for my experience, and I'm sure that there are introverts out there that never, almost never networked and, you know, have a stable job and this and that. But I don't think that applies to the majority. It's basically a muscle that I had to learn how to practice. It's kind of like learning another instrument. I am shy. I have trouble talking. I prefer, you know, not being at a big party. I prefer a cozier setting. something that I was very, very jealous of other people was when you work at a studio, right? And you're, you know, you go to a certain location every day, you have your callings, then there's, let's say, a playtesting event or a game dev meetup event. You go as a group, right? And even at GDC, I'd see these like cliques of like groups of people, and they all work for the same studio. And it's like they get to go to these events and they're not all lonely, right? Worst case, they have someone else to rely on. And when you're a freelancer who doesn't have any connections, well, you show up to those same events with absolutely no one, right? And so you start developing skills and tactics and little like tools for yourself to help you navigate that, especially as someone who is, well, like me, not extroverted. In a networking setting where I'm just at this some sort of a party or some sort of event, and I don't know anyone and I just see these little bubbles, it's very terrifying. But I think I've learned to work through that. But it didn't come easy. It's still not easy. Like I said, it's a muscle.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely I would consider myself pretty introverted. I'm definitely having flashbacks to like parties in high school where, you know, I'm kind of in the corner like, oh, I don't want to interrupt them. But then I also do acting and whatnot. And it's such a different or journalism. Even there's such a switch of like, OK, well, now I'm on, and you kind of just have to be.
Yeah, the on click. I totally get you. And like, God, even on a personal level, like I didn't have a social life. I came from a very conservative, strict upbringing, so I wasn't actually allowed to go out. I've never been to a high school party, like actual big party like thing. I would go to maybe 3 birthday parties a year. And when I say birthday party, I mean like we were 4 kids, right? But yeah, I just did not have that experience, not even on a social level.
What do you mean? You say on your website, let me read it here. You write memorable nostalgic music and emotional sound design. What do you mean by nostalgic music and emotional sound design?
So for nostalgic music, I mean that it's something that makes you remember something. So it has to be a melody or a piece when I write that brings you somewhere, whether it be visually, whether it be emotionally, whether like you're like, huh, that reminds me of this memory. I want it to be something that, I guess, leaves a dent in you. As for emotional sound design, it's a little thing I have, but I believe that good sound design, like people say like, oh, good sound design, like you don't even hear it, you know? Well, I think that like really good sound design, like you feel it. There's something about it that you just, it leaves a little mark. And I think that's what I mean with that. Like for Venba, emotional sound design for me was the mother's bangles. For any South Asian kid, the sound of bangles is extremely nostalgic, especially if you grew up in, you know, a traditional household. Like it's your mother's bangles, like they're always wearing them. So to bring that out, to focus on that for me was very, very important. And that's kind of what I try to do with my sound design, is that something about it has to feel a little bit more emotional. Now, look, it depends on the game, right? If I'm doing sound design for some kind of horror gore game, I don't think I really want it to be nostalgic of anything. Well, I hope it's not, right? But for a game like Venba, I think it was the perfect candidate.
Right. Not to get too, generally, I think it's... nobody wants to hear like, oh, how did you think of that? But I am wondering about the inspiration behind the name Chocobo on Thanksgiving Dinner, which is a song of yours.
Oh my god, I was like, I was in university, second or third year. And yeah, I used to write a lot of video game arrangements back then. Actually, not even back then, like since I was a kid, I used to write a crap ton of arrangements, just nonstop. Whether it be just for piano or other instruments, I loved. I didn't compose. I just wrote arrangements a lot, and I played them a lot. So back then, I still wasn't composing that much. I was really just arranging, and I forgot why, but I just had this idea of like, oh, why not write a string quartet? I think I know why. I used to play the chocobo theme in minor. Just to like piss off my friends. Because like, you know, they think of this happy chocobo and I'm like, haha, let me make it sad. Or I would try to play the one like one winged angel, but in major to make them cringe. But then I realized like, huh, chocobo theme in minor is quite sad and very beautiful. And it just felt like it'd be perfect for a string quartet. So then I wrote an arrangement for that. And then chocobo on Thanksgiving dinner, well, I just think it's hilarious because it's a dead bird and I like gore and I like, I don't know, I love chocobos, okay? I really do. But there's like this dark side of it that's just, ooh, I want to explore that. I don't know if you can tell, but I really want to work on a horror game, like a scary, scary, scary horror game.
Well, I think that probably leads then to, what's on the horizon? What can we look forward to?
Oh, so I am now part-time employee at Pamplemousse. They are the ones who gave me my first internship way back in 2019. They went on a small-ish hiatus, not a hiatus, but you know, it was slowed down a little bit for, you know, various life issues. But we're back on track now. They have hired me part-time, so that's a part-time gig I have. And I'm writing a lot of music, and it's my favorite type of music. It's very Final Fantasy-esque. It's, you know, nostalgic, it's memorable, it's fun, it's about adulthood, it's about childhood. It's a beautiful story. Yeah, the art is all watercolored. The animations are gorgeous. It's going to be beautiful. So I'm working on that. And the rest of my contracts are under NDA.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Cool. Well, people can check you out at nehapatelaudio.com. That's NEHAPATEL audio.com. Anywhere else you want people to check you out?
Twitter and Bandcamp. Oh, yeah. Buy my music on Bandcamp. Cool. It'll help me pay for my cat's vet bills.
Oh.
So please go ahead.
Neha Patel, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.